ourselves, to look for change, to look for well-being, to look for affirmation in the outer. When the reality is that we have to understand that we come fully capable of being worthy and able to receive the abundance, that spirit that God has given us. You know, it's my good pleasure to give you the kingdom. It's just that we're out of phase. We're out of phase with that reality because we're so connected, plugged into our environment, to the world that surrounds us, and triggered by it often. And if we don't have a relationship with the dimension of ourself that is infinite and eternal, the dimension of ourself that lives interconnected to every single thing in the universe, if we don't feel that connection, then we live separate and apart. And when our life looks and feels against us, we're compelled to have it be a certain way in order for us to feel okay about ourselves. But it should be reversed. We should decide how we're going to be with what we're having. And then we should be able to be empowered to use what we have, regardless of how it looks or feels, so we can bring forth a greater good in our life instead of feeling in bondage or limited or otherwise eclipsed or diminished by what we're having. It should be the other way around, shouldn't it? And if we're really engaged in our spiritual practice, we should be able to lift this veil of what separates us from a real sense of knowing our own worth. And when we recognize that all of that is within us, and that becomes real to us, not just a principle, then we can actively be with what's happening in the context of knowing that it's always for us. That's what it means to live above the line, to know that our life is always for us. Because when we're below the line, everything looks and feels as if it's against us. And it only looks and feels that way because we've been conditioned to have our life as if it's against us. We don't know any other way of how to have our life because we haven't known that that's our God job, is to have our life as if it's always for us, to be able to say, this is mine. And I can accept it and receive it. So we've been working with, looking at the techniques, the spiritual practices that help us extricate our well-being and worth out of the outer and really firmly plant it in within ourselves, knowing that our worth is within us, as well as our discomfort. Our discomfort is not out there. Out there is just a mirror to where we're not connected to our sense of well-being and worth. And when we understand that, we'll stop fighting with the outer experience and deal with what's in the way, in here. And so when we begin to practice a way of organizing our attention awareness in the context of the truth of who we are, as opposed to organizing our attention awareness as it fixates upon the conditions and circumstances of our life, we begin to understand that we can work the circuits of consciousness differently when we have a different context for how we're having our life. And if we have our life as if it's for us, then we have to feel a sense that it's for us. And the only way to have our life for us is to be in the feeling that we welcome it, we receive it, we're grateful for what we're having. But it's difficult for us to go to that place of gratitude because our training, our conditioning says that if it doesn't feel good, it must be against me, right, or bad. And so we wait for something to make us feel better before we open ourselves to it. But that's not the way it works. And so if we're to be empowered, if we're to really transform our life, we have to be capable of being with whatever is happening as if it's for us, regardless of its felt quality. All right, so I'm getting a little sidetracked here, and what I want to get back into is helping us understand that when you meditate, when you begin to say, okay, I'm going to begin to develop and activate a relationship with my own interior so that I can experience this dimension of myself that is capable of being with whatever I'm having and not diminished by it. But right now, if I'm operating from my conditioned self, I get triggered when something or someone looks and feels against me. So I have to shift within myself in order for me to be able to be present to what heretofore I would have reacted to, but now I'm going to welcome it. And in order for me to learn how to do that, I have to begin to train my awareness to be differently with what I'm conditioned to otherwise push away when it looks and feels against us. So I'm going to share a short video that helps us understand the challenge that occurs when we make a commitment to begin to disengage from the outer and really open ourselves to the internal places within ourselves where we can generate an authentic sense of well-being and worth. And so here's a little clip that illustrates the challenge that we have.
It's quite normal when we start to meditate for the mind to jump around all over the place. We might find it tends to chase after all the little things, to be constantly moving about from the present to the past to the future, in fact, to rarely be still at all. Fortunately, the mind can be tamed, not by forcing it to stop or trying to make it sit still. We don't want to trap it. That would just stir it up and create even more movement. But by training the mind, having an awareness of when our attention has wandered off and gently bringing it back with a kind and friendly hand. In this way, the mind slowly becomes a little less restless. It also becomes more comfortable with this idea of sitting still. In fact, it might even come to enjoy it. This analogy for the mind has been around for thousands of years. Thankfully, so is the knowledge that, with time and practice, we can learn to train this monkey.
So, how many of you have experienced monkey mind before? Okay, and so I want you to notice something, that when you stop meditating and monkey mind goes away, and then you start plugging back in your circuits back into the outer, it seems that your mind operates differently. And then when you disconnect from the outer and now have to be just within yourself, there's things that are going on that appear to happen as a phenomenon associated with a mind that's unplugged from the outer. So in other words, what happens is that we dimensionally shift when we all of a sudden cut off all the stimulation from what's happening in our life and now focus upon the dynamic of what goes on in when we begin to just think within ourselves. And the phenomenon is such that we need to understand that we're addicted to engaging the outer, and then when we stop, what happens is a phenomenon called monkey mind that begins to kind of tell us that it's too crazy inside, and so we don't ever experience what it's like to get past that experience of our minds being so busy and never learn how to bring our attention awareness to a place where we can hold our attention awareness and achieve a modicum of dominion over how our mind and meaning-making and attention and awareness function. And so when we begin to exercise the internal circuits that begin to reflect inward with respect to our self-system, when we begin to observe our self-system and its unconscious dynamics, we begin to understand that the driven aspect of our life is a conditioned phenomenon as opposed to who we really are. And so while the busyness of our mind is a phenomenon associated with what happens when we unplug from the outer stimulation, the dynamics of our life that look and feel against us are also a phenomenon associated with our life being lived out of a context of separation or below the line. For those of you familiar with the line, it's an either-or situation. You're either living above it or below it. If you're below the line, you're living as if your life is against you. And if you're above the line, how are you living your life? It's for me, right. And so if below the line, the dynamics that define us or the dynamics that limit us or diminish us, if those dynamics are all about life being against us, then how are we having our life? We're having our life as if we are a victim. And so how do we have our life when we're living above the line? We have it always for us. And so if our life is always for us, on some level, it's just a matter of where we're how we're having our life. You see, two different people can have their life below the line and the other person above the line. They still have the same life experience, but where they're living it from or how they're taking it in is the difference. Are you taking in your life from below the line? From a sense of separation, from a sense of inadequacy or unworthiness? Or are you taking in your life from a sense of knowing that it's all for you? And if it's all for you, then you have to use what you have as if it's for you. You have to welcome what you have if it's for you. You have to be in gratitude for what you have if it's for you. We have to generate the felt sense of you are welcoming it, or I am welcoming it if I'm actually to be in this experience of above the line authentically. And so while we're in this kind of struggle of understanding the dynamics of our self system, we can all relate to and understand that for the most part, our self system is unconscious to us. In other words, we don't necessarily know we're in the habit of being in a certain mood or temperament. We don't know that we're in a certain habit of doing things, and a lot of things we do are unconscious, such as unconscious eating or spending. We're not often conscious of how we're having our life, and we may be conscious of who's the matter with us, but we're not conscious of the dynamic within ourselves that is actually having somebody the matter with us on purpose, because there's a payoff in that. That we have habituated this self system to look forward to expect. And you know, it's interesting that tell a little story about Jane and me. And Jane is in charge of the extracurricular activities of our family being the two of us. And because otherwise our life is so myopic in the sense that we just live church. You know, everything in our life has something to do with our ministry. The Q process, my coaching, her stuff, writing, everything has to do with this ministry. And so I'm happy to pour myself into it, you know. It's just so she's trying to get us to do things, like go on hikes and go to plays and go experience stuff. And so I have a hard time kind of saying yes to everything, but so my practice is to try to step out of that pattern and say yes to everything that Jane wants to do. But what happens is that when I go out to the event that I said yes to, there's a part of me that's trying to figure out a way out of it. All right? So I'm conscious that's going to happen. So I'm trying to settle myself. So we went out to this play. A Midsummer's Night Dream, Shakespeare. And it was a combination fundraiser for our group,
our place,
a community service organization that helps the homeless, that helps prevent homelessness. And so we went to this event, and here I am, okay, I'm going to go to this play, and I'm actually going to enjoy it. And so we get there, and everything's late, and everything's crowded, and my brain is, I can use this as an excuse. I can use this as an excuse. I can use this as an excuse. And so here I was, my body was trying to tell me, you don't have to sit here for this, you know. And so here I was trying to settle my body, because I knew it was a pattern. I knew these circuits were just kind of running me. And then finally I got to a place where I was able just simply to relax. I got my little Tai Chi self on. And then something happened in that moment. I got distracted. And as soon as I got distracted, during intermission, they started auctioning more things off, which meant that the intermission was going to be not 10 minutes long, but 30 minutes long. And it was already 9:30 at night, and we hadn't even get the second part of it. And so as soon as that situation came, I was out of there. But the point I'm trying to make about this is that our lives are run like that automatically all the time, and we think that that's just how things are and that's normal. And if we don't understand that there are consequences for just letting ourselves kind of make all the rationality about, okay, this is going to be boring, I'm not going to like this, and then we gather all the evidence that we need to make up whatever it is that we need to decide that convinces ourselves, no, I'm out of here. And so the dynamic is that if we don't intervene with respect to our own habits of being, our own unconscious self system, then you know our reaction to life, to our life is our life. Your reaction to your life is your life. I mean, that's important for us to hear. Our reaction or our response our reaction or our response is our life. And if we don't recognize that, then we're believing as if our life happens to us and we stay below the line. So,
one question that conscious leaders ask themselves over and over is, where am I? To support leaders in locating themselves as they ask the question, where am I? We offer this tool, a line, a simple black line. At any moment, all leaders and all people are either above the line or below the line. Our location describes how we're being with what is occurring in our life right now. If we're above the line, we are open, curious, and committed to learning. If we are below the line, we are closed, defensive, and committed to being right. Stop right now and simply ask yourself, where am I? In this now moment, am I above the line or below the line? Typically, when people are below the line, they believe certain things about the world. For example, they believe there is not enough. It could be that there's not enough money, or time, or space, or energy, or love. People below the line also believe that their story about the situation is right. People below the line also believe that there is a threat out there. Something or someone is threatening their desire for approval, control, or security. And people below the line see the situation as serious. The deeper below the line they are, the more serious things look. People below the line tend to behave certain ways as well. They tend to cling to an opinion, find fault and blame, gossip, explain, rationalize and justify, get overwhelmed, and avoid conflict or pursue conflict for the sake of winning. When people are above the line, they believe that learning and growing are more important than being right. They believe that all people and circumstances are their allies, here for their growth. They believe that from a distance, almost everything is funny. People above the line live in curiosity, listen deeply, speak unarguably, question all their beliefs, and live a life of play. Now, knowing what you know about being above or below the line, where are you? One thing to know as you consider this question. We are hardwired to go below the line. Literally, our brain is programmed to perceive threat. And when it does, a chemical cocktail courses through our veins, and we go below the line. This reaction was designed to help us survive in the presence of a real threat to our physical survival. An issue for modern-day leaders is that often our brains can't tell the difference between a threat to our physical survival and a threat to our ego or identity. We react and get defensive when we experience a threat to our ego. So in many ways, being below the line is natural and normal. But when we are below the line, we're not in a state, literally brain state, of high creativity, collaboration, innovation, and relational connection. We're simply trying to survive. Leaders today can't thrive if they're in survival mode. So the first activity of conscious leadership is location, location, location. In this now moment, where am I? Telling ourselves and others the truth about our current location begins the great conversation.
So the first step is just to know your location. Are you above the line or below the line? And then when you recognize that, oh, I'm below the line, then what should you think is next? Get above the line, right? Okay, so so Jane and I are going to be doing a lot of talks on getting above the line, but let's just sort of unpack this a little bit more. So the title of my talk is Owning Our Life, Owning Your Life. And so if we think about owning our life, what is the thing that we need to really own? We need to own what we're here to bring forth. We are here to bring forth something that fulfills a purpose that makes this world a better place. And we have to own that intent, the intent that seeks to live itself through us unto our world as the Christ of God, or the one unto our life. There is a purpose for which we are here in this world to bring forth, and we can't do that if we're below the line because we're in victimhood. And so owning our life means that we have to own being above the line, because that's where our life really begins, with the life that we have in order to be able to make the world a better place. And so part of the effort is that when we own our something, we say, this is mine. And when we say this is mine, it means that we take responsibility for it. And part of our effort is to really mature in our relationship with our spiritual journey, and recognizing that ownership means that we have to take 100% responsibility for how we're having our life. And if we're having our life as if it's against us, then we have to fix ourselves. We have to shift within ourselves, not the outer, because it's going to be a wasted effort. And so part of understanding the below-the-line dynamic, it's systemic. In other words, it's not the truth of us. It's a conditioned dimension of us. And we're just out of phase with the above the blind, with the above the blind. You know what I'm talking about. So as can you see, does this not make sense to you? Yes, makes sense? Okay. And so if we can see that are all of the below the line behaviors that we are engaging, and we live in the engagement of those below the line behaviors as if that those are the things we should do because everybody does those things. I mean, can you see what's wrong with the world with this diagram? What, you know, politics is all below the line, isn't it? You know, what if our healthcare system and our political system and our educational system. Think about all the systems that we depend upon to nurture us from cradle to grave that are below the line. And who's going to fix that?
Us.
That's right. And what if we're the first spiritual community that can demonstrate what above the line behavior accomplishes in the world? Wouldn't you want to be a part of that effort? Yeah. You know, and so when we really create a community around this intent to do the best that we can to wake up when we realize we're below the line and just halt, stop, and just pray that we don't have a regret for what we've just been put ourselves and others through, and be in the intent to be above the line. So here's how you know that you're living below the line. The first is if you have any scarcity in your life, if you can make something mean this is not enough, you're below the line. Because when you get above the line, that's impossible to do because you're connected to everything. You're not separate from anything. But when we're below the line, we feel separate. It feels like we're not enough when we don't have what we need. And we can't save ourselves from that. We have to begin to function from a different dimension of ourselves. And when we recognize that our behaviors, the things that, you know, drive us, our programs that we've taken on, that they're circuitry. It's a circus. We're systemically conditioned to react and be however we're being, depending upon what's happening in our environment. We have a circuit for our boss. We have a circuit for our kids. We have circuits for all the people that we have that are the matter with us, but they're conditioned in our self system. And if we're to extricate from that, if we're to move from below the line to above it, we have to know what's going on. We have to understand that the dynamics that are happening below the line are we're caught up in our unconscious self. And these circuits run without our having to pay attention to it. And these circuits define us if we don't rework them. And all we're saying is that when we bring the whole system, all the circuits up above the line, we have a different reality. And so you still have to deal with the circuits of being. You still have to deal with the circuits of doing, of having, of feeling, of believing, of perceiving. But we don't have to create habits that are below the line dynamics. We can create above the line habits that have us habitually welcoming in what we're having as our life. So if we have scarcity, if we have judgment, if we have struggle, those are the three habits that keep us below the line. And so the antidote has to be feeling our connection to all of life and therefore the abundance that is implicit in that reality, knowing that we're all connected and knowing, except for the grace of God, there go I, so I can let go of judgment right there. Besides, down here, judgment is against me. Up here, every judgment is for me. And the reason why every judgment is for me above the line is because every judgment is not about me. Down below, every judgment is about me. Down below, your need to be right makes me wrong implicitly. But when I'm above the line, your need to be right doesn't make me wrong. Can you see the difference? There's a whole different life out there depending upon where we're living it. Our reaction to our life is our life. I think I'll stop there.